Welcome to The Reference Desk, a podcast where two librarians take you down the rabbit hole of the topics that have bewitched us.
So adjust the chain on your reading glasses, button up your favorite cardigan, and follow us punk-ass book jockeys through the stacks to The Reference Desk.
Welcome to The Reference Desk.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Haley.
And we're together!
We're together in the same room!
This is crazy.
It hasn't happened in 2 years. I know.
Yeah.
The last time we recorded together was the last time we were together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you all are along for this ride with us.
Hooray! Hooray. We're on a fun family vacation together.
We are. Do you want to tell them where we are?
Yeah.
Okay. So we are in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Along with everyone else.
Like the literally country. Everyone else. I had no idea it was this busy.
Yeah. And we had a different topic picked that we were going to record together, but we needed to gather more inspiration, information while we were here.
Yeah.
Before we recorded that one.
Uh-huh.
So you'll never guess what
you'll
the topic
You'll never
was
guess.
We needed to, you know, be in this area.
Yeah, so that's coming, and that'll be another joint episode.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah. So instead, we are recording kind of like, what did we decide to call it? Like a mental health vacation?
It is. It's a mental health vacation. So we're just doing like fun stories or stories that like don't have enough to be a full deep dive, but we still wanted to talk about because the world is a dumpster fire. And so we need a break. Because most of the topics that we do on the show, one way or another, end up being pretty dark.
Because everything, like, always ends up having a dark side.
It so does.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
There's always something. Except for Mr. Rogers. He was perfect.
He was just...
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. Mental health break episode. Hooray.
Yay.
Yeah, this has been such a great trip, though.
It has. I'm real sad that it's over tomorrow.
Oh, I know. Our kiddos are a little bit more grown up, and so they had so much fun playing together.
Yes,
now.
So cute together. Okay, well, we have to be out of this Airbnb in less than 12 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And we have enough food here to make about 14 more meals. So we have to record this so we can eat.
Yes, all of the food. All of it. Awesome.
Okay. A few weeks before this vacation, a few weeks before now, I don't know why I'm phrasing it like
before
that.
This vacation that you all are on with us.
The rabbit hole that I fell down that distracted me from all of the garbage that is the universe was, there's no way that anyone missed this, but if you did, back in February, a TikTok user named Risa Tisa uploaded a 50-part series of videos entitled Who the Fuck Did I Marry? And over the course of 6 hours of content, Risa explains how she met, married, and divorced her ex-husband, who was a pathological liar.
So I expressly did not watch those. So I am coming in cold. So I'm very excited.
Oh my God. Okay. So in case you're like Haley and you haven't watched yet, or if you don't have 6 hours to watch, first of all, yes, you do.
You do.
You do. You do. You do. Get real. Turn this off and go listen to Risa Tisa.
Like you weren't scrolling already.
Right, right. No, put it on like a podcast. Listen while you drive to work, clean your house or whatever. I saw that she said like she intentionally created them to be listened to like an audiobook. So don't feel like you have to sit there and like watch it. I deep cleaned my bedroom while I finished it.
Phenomenal.
Like, cleaned the walls.
Okay.
Because that's how invested I was. And wonderful. I haven't done that maybe ever. So. Okay. So I'm just going to give you like my summary of the story.
Fantastic.
Okay. So in March 2020.
March 2020.
That's March 2020. And a lot of what happened to Risa can really be explained only because of the times that it happened in.
Okay.
because the COVID pandemic and lockdown gives her boyfriend slash husband just what he needs to be able to pull this off.
Oh, no.
Okay, so in March 2020, Risa, who was in her 30s and living in the Atlanta area, matched on several dating sites with a man.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And I love Risa because she says, retelling this story, she's like, I understand that I missed a lot of red flags. And then she calls it the United Nations of red flags.
Amazing.
First was that she matched with this man on multiple sites, and on each site, his name was slightly different.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So she does not reveal his identity. She gives him the pseudonym Legion.
Okay. Because they are many? Oh, well.
Yeah. So in case you're unfamiliar, Legion refers to a man infested by a swarm of demons in a biblical story. So you kind of get the idea of where this is headed.
Wow.
Yep. So when she was on her way to meet him for their first date, Risa had a blowout on the highway.
Oh, no.
And so she called Legion to cancel. Well, you know, I'm so sorry. I just lost a tire on the highway. And Legion, like, comes to her rescue.
Mm.
He meets her at the tire place, insists that she let him pay to replace the tire, and, like, gets her car all fixed up and is like, all right, now let's go to dinner.
Oh,
so like swoon,
yeah,
right? Like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So Risa is immediately smitten with him, and the pair just really quickly discover that they really like each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then Atlanta, like everywhere else, went into lockdown for COVID.
Yeah.
So they're in this very new relationship where they're both like not looking to date casually, but they had to decide basically, like, are we quarantining together?
Oh.
Or are we done?
Right.
And Risa lived alone, so she was worried that she was going to be super lonely during lockdown.
Yeah, which, fair.
Fair, yeah. And Legion said that he was living in like a temporary studio apartment housing situation while he was shopping for a home to purchase because he had just relocated to Atlanta for work.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up deciding that Legion would move in with Risa, and they'll just quarantine together and see how this works.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, things were really good. Legion tells Risa that he's now basically in the running for this C-suite level executive role at a huge condiment manufacturer in Atlanta.
Okay.
But he used to play professional arena football.
Hmm.
And he says that he has quite a bit of money that he made playing football that was invested well. And now he's just rich, apparently.
Oh, okay.
And he is planning on shopping for a home in like the 750K price range and considering paying in all cash.
Sure.
Huh? Uh-huh. And because Legion is so well off, he suggests that he just take over all of the household bills. So, and he does. He starts paying all of the bills.
Oh, my God.
So Risa was paying, like, I think, like, her car note and then, like, whatever she wanted to buy her for herself.
Yeah.
Which was incredible.
Yeah.
And aside from really offering a lot of financial security, he also seemed to share a lot of Risa's values. He was super close with his family.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke to his brother on the phone every single morning as they were both getting ready for work.
Oh.
And, of course, it's COVID, so they can't meet each other's families in person. But it seems to Risa that family is really important to Legion just based on the amount of time he spends communicating with them.
Mm-hmm.
Legion also tells Risa that he had been married before in California, where he had gone to college and then ended up, I guess, meeting his wife, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the breakup was messy because he caught his partner cheating.
Ooh.
But he says he's still really close with his two stepchildren who are now at this point like older teens or young adults.
Okay.
So pretty quickly, Legion and Risa decided that they were both in this for like the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little older. They're both like, you know, mid 30s to late 30s, and they want to kind of get married, start a family, that kind of thing. which was good because Risa became pregnant.
Fine.
And she was super excited, but tragically, she had a miscarriage early in the pregnancy. She was devastated. And to make matters worse, she had to go to the hospital for a D&C procedure following the miscarriage, which was very traumatic for her.
Yes.
And Legion is telling her that he's up for this promotion to basically be like a vice president at this huge company. So he has a really important meeting the day of her procedure. So he can't go.
Yeah.
So she has to take a friend. And the hospital staff was trying to reach Legion and they keep getting a hold of his personal assistant instead. Anyways, it ends up he's like 2 hours late to pick up Risa after this.
Ooh.
You know, traumatic procedure.
Right.
Yeah. So that was another red flag of the United Nations. And in the middle of all of this, Legion was telling Risa he wanted to buy her a new car and that his company was providing him with a stipend to buy himself a new car as like a company vehicle perk kind of deal. And that he also wants them to shop for a house together. So they spend a lot of time test driving cars and looking at houses. And these are like luxury cars and homes. So he wants to buy Risa a BMW or an Audi. And they were looking at homes close to like $1 million. And Legion is talking about paying for all of this in cash. And now at this point, he had shown Risa a pre-approval letter from Chase that said that he was approved for a mortgage of up to $750,000. And he's also told her that he has a substantial offshore bank account with all of this arena football money in it. And that he's, you know, probably just going to use that to pay cash for all of these things.
Probably. Just, you know, I've got it lying around.
And what I love that, like, as these videos were coming out, people were looking at, like, the Google search trends and like everything, like arena football, like spikes.
That's amazing.
So anyways, Risa is like, I saw the pre-approval letter, so it's like he's been approved for this massive mortgage, so obviously he must have, like, this must be legit. And he's paying for all of her household bills, so there's really no reason not to believe him. But every time they get close to buying either a car or a house, something happens. So in any large transaction like this, there's always kind of a point where you have to, like, you know, prove that you can afford the thing before the deal can progress. So, like, he puts in an all cash offer on a house. Risa sees him sign this offer, this legally binding document saying that he's good for this amount. And when it's time to show the buyers, when it's time to show the sellers of that house proof of funds before they will accept that offer, he's just like, no, absolutely not. You're not looking at my financial information. And he tells Risa it's because he thinks that the sellers are going to see that he has all of this money and then not accept his offer. They're going to, you know, counter with more and more because they're going to see how wealthy he is. Which that's not how any of that works. But so it's not like they've just been scrolling Zillow on their couch like I do.
All the time.
This is like, I mean, like, they're virtually touring houses because it's COVID or sending an agent to see the houses for them and report back to them. They're putting in offers or signing paperwork. Like, I, at one point, several points, I think he had told Risa that he had, you know, submitted earnest money deposits. And then they're going out and, like, shopping for furniture. Houses. Like, they go to Home Depot and put deposits on appliances. And they go to Ashley Furniture and pick out their, like, their living room set. And then one time, Legion tells Risa he's finally found the model of an Audi SUV that they'd been looking for. And he tells her he bought it. So it would be delivered to the house. And Risa took off work for the day to make sure she's home. And it never came. And Legion has, you know, some excuse about the dealership basically trying to screw them over or something. It's just like every single time It's almost there.
Right.
Something happens.
Huh.
Until Risa is finally like, forget it. Like, between the pandemic, between going through a miscarriage,
yeah,
and everything else, like, I can't spend all of my free time shopping for cars and houses.
And then not getting anything.
And then not getting anything. And then, sadly, there was not a baby on the way anymore, so there was no need to, like, rush anything.
Yeah.
So she's like, let's just take a beat. Let's stop shopping. They do end up buying like a mid-range, like normal car for Risa, and mm-hmm. Legion puts down a few thousand dollars and helps with the payment. So at this point, you're like 3 hours in.
Oh, she must be a fantastic storyteller.
Oh my God, she's so good. She's so good. And like her attention to detail is like incredible.
Oh,
it's just so good. And she's also just like so honest about the mistake she made,
uh-huh.
things that she purposefully overlooked because she wanted to be married. She wanted to start her family.
Yeah.
But the red flags were starting to pile up.
Yeah.
Like there was the fact that then Legion told her that he was promoted to VP.
Mm-hmm.
So he's working a C-suite level job at a huge company, but he still was going to work every day in sneakers and a t-shirt.
Uh-oh. that's not a thing.
And he told her that it was because he's just spent so much of his day like out walking the manufacturing floor that he might as well be comfortable. And then like the whole house and car thing was definitely weird, but every time that she doubted him, Legion had like proof that convinced her, like pre-approval letters. He showed her bank statements. She listened to him make like dozens of phone calls to like banks, realtors, everyone trying to make these deals work.
Mm-hmm.
And even though she saw those red flags, she just so desperately wanted a relationship, which, yeah. I mean, show me a woman who hasn't overlooked red flags because they want to be in a relationship.
Yup.
So Risa and Legion decided to get married.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So they got married in January 2021. They get married at the courthouse, very low key. Mm-hmm. And then after the wedding, things got so much worse.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So they started looking for homes again. But this time, the pre-approval letter that Legion had showed her before is now like over a year old. So they can't use it anymore. And they can't find a realtor who will work with them without some kind of proof of funds.
Yes. Yeah.
And Legion just keeps refusing. Risa also found some like flirty Facebook messages on his phone.
Oh.
He started coming home late from work. And then at the end of April, Risa started looking for a new job because she wanted to get a higher salary so she could pay her car payment without needing his help.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And when she got a job offer, her employer asked her to do a background check, which included some questions, you know, about her spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And when she gives Legion the paperwork, he writes in his social security number, and she notices that it's different from the one that he put on their marriage license.
No, that's not great. No.
No. So at that point, she just goes in like full on private investigator mode.
Yeah.
And she started doing some background checks. Legion had told her that before moving to Atlanta, he lived in California with his ex-wife,
mm-hmm.
and that he had gone to San Diego State University and played college football there. But the social security number that he put on the background check packet didn't show any ties to California. Like, it's not related to like any addresses. Like, does not appear that he's ever lived there. And she couldn't find any football rosters with his name on it, which mm-hmm. if someone plays for like San Diego State,
yeah,
you should be able to Google San Diego State Legion.
Yes, and of course.
You're going to get stuff.
Yeah.
So she called San Diego State and requested transcripts for, you know, her husband, and says that, you know, she's doing this for him, gives them his social, and they're like, yeah, we don't have any records that match that.
Oh.
So she confronted Legion, and Legion said that the school doesn't have any records of him because his dad had paid for him to attend as a private citizen to protect all of his personal information.
No, that's not, no,
not a thing.
Not a thing. Not a thing. No.
And she's, and Risa is, she's so smart. And she's like, well, okay, well, you played football for them, right? Well, NCAA rules are that every student athlete has to be listed.
Yeah.
How are you not listed?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I was a private citizen.
That doesn't, no, 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 nope.
And now around this same time that she's kind of like, something is wrong.
Yeah.
He tells her that his stepdaughter has died of COVID.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he asked Risa if she would be okay if he sent his ex-wife a few thousand dollars to help cover the funeral costs.
Mm.
And Risa is like, yes, of course. Anything that we can do, like, let's do it.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she says that, like, looking back, if there were so many things that seemed obvious. But one thing that he kept doing was, like, he had these stories that were related to people dying. And she was like, it never occurred to me that, like, someone would lie about someone dying.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere in her digging with all these background checks, Risa found out that Legion was divorced in Georgia, not California.
Mm.
And that his wife was the one to file for divorce, not him. And he had responded to the filing with the pauper's plea. Which basically means that he didn't have the money to cover any of the legal proceedings.
Oh, no.
So Risa calls the ex-wife.
Yeah, good.
And she's like, listen, I'm not trying to, like, bring your past up or anything. I just need to know if I'm losing my mind or not. Like, I think this man is lying to me. And the ex tells her, like, he is.
No.
He's a master manipulator, and whatever he tells you is a lie.
Uh-oh.
She says, quote, like, literally everything that man says is a lie.
Oh, no.
Her kids don't have any relationship with Legion.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Georgia, not California.
One of them's not dead.
And her daughter is definitely not dead.
God.
So at this point, Risa knows that Legion is just full of shit.
Yeah.
But she is so smart, she decides to wait and keep digging up dirt on him until she knows that she has enough where there is no way that he can, like, wiggle his way out of this.
Yes.
So she continues to research. She finds out that he's been married twice. She finds text messages with a sex worker named Peaches.
Peaches.
Whose service he was using regularly.
Oh, my.
She finds out that Legion has created family members who don't exist.
Fabulous.
She does reverse image searches and finds out that a bunch of the stuff Legion had shown her were just, like, photos stolen from Google.
Oh, no.
Like, all of those bank statements, the pre-approval letter, they were all just screenshots
of
Google images.
Yeah.
There was one point where he had taken her to his grandparents' grave.
Oh, my God.
And it turns out that, like, it was not their grave. But it had the right last name on it. So he had taken the time to find a grave that had the last name and had the husband and the wife.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. And at this point, like, things are not good between them, even within their relationship. He is living in the guest bedroom. He's also pretty much bedridden at this point because he has this knee injury that he tells Risa is an old football injury that he somehow, you know, re-injured at work. He can hardly walk and has lost like 40 pounds he's not eating.
Yeah.
He refused to go to the doctor. So, like, obviously he's hiding something there. Probably he doesn't have health insurance because he's not the VP of a company.
Right.
So Risa waited until Legion's birthday to confront him about everything.
Phenomenal.
And she kicks him out. He is literally hobbling his way out of the house. Risa immediately changed her locks. She filed for divorce. And Legion, meanwhile, supposedly goes to Philadelphia to stay with an aunt.
Mm-hmm.
The aunt is real. Well, kind of. She's not an aunt, but she's like a family friend.
Okay.
So Legion's family, after he comes home, is basically trying to figure out, like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And so Risa ended up getting in touch with some of them, including Legion's brother, Chris, who Legion, you know, spoke on the phone to every morning.
Right.
So for over a year, Risa has listened to Legion have these morning phone conversations. Like, he's talking to someone about what's going on in his life. He'd, like, poke his head into the bathroom and be like, hey, Chris says, hey, Risa. And Risa would be like, oh, hey, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Chris tells Risa that they haven't spoken since 2015.
What the fuck?
So Legion was faking phone conversations every single morning for over a year.
Oh, my God. What in the world?
So next, this so-called aunt that Legion is staying with calls Risa and asks her, you know, when is Legion going to be able to see his child?
Oh, no.
Because Legion had told the family that Risa and him had a son together.
Oh. No.
Yeah. So Legion starts harassing Risa. He's asking constantly about when he's going to be able to come back to the house and get the stuff that he left there. And Risa is obviously super wary.
Yeah.
So she works and she works in a field like related to law enforcement or works for in law enforcement. She's not an officer, but she's like in that field.
Sure.
So she reaches out to law enforcement and kind of asks, like, what are my options? Mm-hmm. Like, can he legally do this? Can I have someone there with me? Like, she's just trying to keep herself safe.
Totally.
And during all of this, talking with the police, they figure out that Legion has a warrant out for his arrest.
Well, perfect.
Yes. So he had previously been arrested for impersonating a police officer.
Jesus.
And he had a warrant out for violating his probation.
Oh, my God.
So Legion returns to collect his stuff, and basically it's a sting operation.
Mm-hmm.
Risa sets up a time. There's a police car waiting up the street, and when Legion gets there, they arrest him.
Okay.
And it is immediately obvious that he has been living in his car.
Oh.
He's smelly. His clothes are dirty. He's got all of his stuff in the back seat.
Uh-huh.
So this man who had crafted this image of being a VP was actually living out of his car.
Yeah.
And I believe eventually Risa pieces together that he was like driving a forklift for that condiment company, not VP.
Not VP.
So Legion goes to jail for a little bit. And while he's there, Risa moved. And when he got out and tried to contact her, she basically threatened him with a restraining order.
Sure.
And that was pretty much it.
Okay.
So right after her video series wrapped, Risa did like a 2-hour plus live event to answer all the questions she'd gotten about her relationship, her reactions. So let's talk a little bit about the response to Risa's story.
Yeah.
So she uploaded the first video on February 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was all wrapped up and done 3 days later on February 17th.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Her account went from like a handful of followers to 3.4 million followers in a few days.
That is oh, my God.
And as of March 1st, her series had over 437 million views.
Oh, my God.
And one of my favorite parts of watching the series was reading through all the comments and seeing, like, how people were so invested. Like, Wendy's was there for, like, every single video commenting. And there was just, like, some sort of magic sauce that just made everyone love Risa.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was pulling for her. And I think part of it is because she spoke so openly about being completely fucked over by a man.
Yeah.
And she was really transparent about the warning signs that she either didn't see or saw and willfully ignored.
Yeah.
So for women who have had this experience, like, even if it's not to this level, we've all had experiences somewhere on this spectrum of knowing that a man is lying to us about something. And seeing, like, Risa just break this down, like, so factually and with all of her receipts was just very, like, liberating and cathartic.
Yeah.
And then, like, for people who didn't have a lot of experience in relationships, they were so grateful because it was, like, what to look for.
Oh, yeah.
And really, it's just trust your instincts. And if something feels too good to be true,
it is.
So before Risa finished releasing her full story, someone found Legion. And basically outed him using his real identity. Risa was very careful, like, to never share his name, never share any personal details. But of course,
it's the internet.
It's the internet. He was found. And this man has spoken out publicly since all of this under his real name.
Oh, wow.
So I feel like it's okay to use that name now since he's claimed it. So his real name is Jerome McCoy.
Okay.
And he is, of course, saying that everything Risa said about him is a complete lie.
Well, of course.
According to Jerome, the couple was having marital issues and going through counseling after he caught Risa cheating with another man in their house.
That's a familiar story.
Yep. And he says that, you know, they just couldn't make it work. And so he initiated the breakup and that Risa then came crawling back to him.
Okay.
And, you know, wanted him back so, so badly and threatened to expose him through all of these lies if he refused to get back together with her. So Jerome told TMZ that the video series had negatively affected his career
as a forklift driver
and that his company was considering a defamation lawsuit against Risa.
Oh, sure.
So he says that he's working in PR for a hospital now.
That's, you know, it's just a lateral move, you know.
Forklift, PR.
Same thing.
But as far as I can tell, like, that has not been confirmed at all.
Sure.
And also, who would give this man a job in public relations?
No.
So since the series premiered, others have come forward claiming to have their own experiences with Jerome.
Oh, wow.
His ex-wife, LaToya, confirmed that she and Jerome were married and hadn't been in contact in nearly a decade.
Uh-huh.
She agreed with Reese's allegations that Jerome is manipulative and said her ex tried to ruin her life.
Oh.
She said, quote, he had family turn against me because he wanted to tell people lies about me and things of that nature. And unfortunately, he's very, very good at what he does. It took me many, many, many years to get past that.
Oh my gosh.
LaToya's son, Tashawn, also confirmed that Jerome had been married to his mom and that he had even had the teen arrested after Tashawn physically intervened when he heard Jerome threaten his mom. But thankfully, the police dismissed those charges.
Yeah, good. Oy.
This is wild.
Okay, so let's talk about the good things that have happened to Risa since this series. So she was invited to appear on numerous TV shows like Good Morning America.
Oh my gosh.
She's already receiving offers from people who want to turn her story into a movie, book, TV show, anything.
Fabulous.
So she has hired an agent to represent her.
Okay.
One of, like, the really heartbreaking things that Legion did to her while they were together was he presented her with this gift that was, like, all of these documents that showed that he was planning on taking her to London and Paris, which was a trip that she had dreamed about since she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And of course, the trip never happened.
Right.
But Risa has been gifted her own trip.
Oh my gosh.
With the help of Hilton and Delta. And she will be going on a luxury vacation to London and Paris soon.
Yay!
BMW was not as generous.
Mm.
In the videos where Risa was describing, like, the days she wasted car shopping with Legion, she says repeatedly that her dream car was the BMW X5 in dark blue with cognac leather interior.
Wow, sure.
And her comments were flooded by people tagging BMW and telling them to gift her the car.
Wait, listen.
And BMW initially seemed to be planning on it. They used Risa's audio in several of their own videos promoting their vehicles. And they commented on her videos saying that they were looking for her dream car, like trying to locate the exact model.
Yeah.
But they never followed through.
Bitches.
Yeah. So people were pissed.
Yes.
You know, this big company is using a black woman for clout and then just ghosting her.
Yeah. No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I did see that Hyundai invited Risa to come to one of their dealerships and pick out whatever car she wanted. So hopefully she gets a beautiful new car.
Yeah.
Risa said that though a lot of people assume that she's made a ton of money from these videos, as of March 5th, she'd only made about $5,000.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
But her attorney has said that they believe Risa will make up to $2 million this year and up to $4 million next year based on all the deals that she has already kind of lining up.
Amazing.
Yes. She hasn't quit her regular job yet.
Mm-hmm.
She still works 9 to 5 for a law enforcement agency because she likes the stability, the retirement plan, and the benefits.
Smart.
Since she knows that viral flame can be viral. Viral fame can be fleeting.
Yes.
And she only plans on quitting if her fame interferes with her ability to effectively do her job.
Oh.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts was Risa was talking about a time when, like, she was being allowed to work from home mm-hmm. during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Her boss made her and one other lady come back because they were not effective at working at home.
Oh, no.
And she's like, I knew it. I wasn't mad. She's like, I was watching Netflix. I wasn't working. So relatable.
Yeah.
So what I really loved about this whole phenomenon was that Risa experienced something terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And when she shared her story, she did so without really anything to gain. She had no idea that it would turn out into this viral explosion. She just did it because she hoped that maybe some other women would see it and be able to learn from her mistakes. She didn't share, like, look what I overcame and now I'm on top of the world.
Yeah.
Like, she was still very much hurting and not doing great, but she also didn't share for pity, if that makes
sense. Yeah.
Like, she wasn't asking to be rescued. She was just like, I'm hurt. This was awful. I don't have a clear solution.
Right.
Or all the answers, but I'm here. And maybe by being here, I can help someone else.
Yeah. And, like, didn't try to make herself look better. Like, was truthful about. Yeah.
And I think, like, that's what makes her so endearing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's highlighted the power of storytelling and its ability to bring people together.
Yes.
Like, here's this woman who maybe we otherwise don't think we have much in common with
mm-hmm.
or we would walk by without even noticing. And after hearing her story, like, we all just want her to have the best things in life.
Yeah.
Regardless of if we agree with everything she does or says, mm-hmm. we look at her and realize this woman deserves a good life.
Yeah.
And I think if we took the time to listen to others more, we'd probably think that about everyone.
That's true.
And we'd probably see a much bigger push for collective action for mm-hmm. things like, you know, basic income and housing.
Uh-huh.
And I think in a time when our government is effectively trying to control how we share our stories, it's important to remember that. Sometimes the most effective tool we have is just showing up as we are and sharing our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we both think literacy is so important.
Yes.
So that's what I know about Risa Tisa.
That's awesome.
I highly recommend that everyone go watch the whole series.
Yeah.
There are so many other wild lies that this man told, and Risa continues to be hilarious. She just posted the other day about going to Target because she's like, I'm not rich, but I finally have Target money. And she's like, I walked in and I got a basket and all the wheels worked. There was no child screaming.
Yeah.
I'm like, so relatable.
Yeah. Amazing.
So yeah, that's Risa Tisa.
That's phenomenal. I'm definitely going to go listen.
Yes, she's so great.
Awesome. So mine is a little bit different than that. A lot of our topics tend to be historical, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's why a lot of them are super, super dark. And, you know, especially in a time where it seems like we are just not, as a country, learning from any of our past mistakes or looking at history critically at all. It's fun to know that there are still just some wild gems of just pure hilarity in history that are, like, not super dark. And so, like, there's something that I've wanted to talk about for a really long time. It's, like, my favorite little weird tidbit of history.
Okay.
But there's, like, not enough weight to it, you know, for a full episode or a deep dive. So I'm so excited that we get to talk about it now. It makes me laugh every time I think about it.
Okay.
So I'm just going to start. So you may think that right now, you know, in today's society, we have maybe an abundance or an overabundance of, like, frivolous lawsuits, which, sure. But we are nowhere near as bad as medieval times. It was pretty bad then, because it was not uncommon for people to bring up charges and actually hold trials against animals.
What?
What? Yes, animals. And these were like not jokes like, oh, how cute would it be if we brought an animal to court? No, these were very serious proceedings. They could last months.
Oh, my God.
They employed like respected lawyers on both sides.
My God. So this is not like a town voting to make their dog a mayor.
Absolutely not. No, they are holding animals accountable for their crime.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I love this. Okay.
So medieval authorities held the view that crimes committed by all beasts and birds, as well as creeping things, which is how one text explained this, were the work of the devil, and that if they went unpunished, the devil would have an opportunity to rule over human matters. So animals committing crimes, clearly the devil.
Oh my God.
So this notion was directly inspired by the Greek notion that crimes, whether done by beasts or even inanimate objects, should always be duly atoned for, or else the fates would be angered, causing famine and illness to spread. So it seems like there's some sort of like balance that needs to be happen.
Mm-hmm.
But along with animals, yeah, there were a lot of cases where inanimate objects were tried, including there was a story about a statue of the poet Theognis that toppled over and fell onto a man, smashing his head.
That's awful. So, I'm sorry. Yeah,
no, it's like a cartoon, though. Like,
yeah.
Like, yes. So the statue was given a trial. Was found guilty.
No.
And was thrown into the sea.
Oh my God.
It was properly punished. And there was really nothing that was safe from these instances. There was even a pope who, 7 months after dying, was disinterred.
No.
Propped up on the stand.
Oh my God.
And accused of perjury and claiming to be a bishop when he was really just a layman. This was like during one of those, you know, schisms, I guess, in Catholicism, where there was two sides. And so they didn't think he was a real pope. So he disinterred him.
Dug him up.
They did. There was a deacon that was selected to speak for him. I don't know if they...
Like a... They're not. Puppet situation. Ventriloquist.
Yeah. The corpse was found guilty.
Oh my God.
It was stripped of its papal vestments and had three fingers removed from the hand that would do like the blessings. And then he was interred in a graveyard for foreigners. So it's just like, over there, we don't know him.
Sit with us.
Doesn't even go here. Only to be dug up again and thrown into the river, tied by weights.
Why did they dig
up? I guess they changed their mind. Like, no, this isn't bad enough. He needs to go in the river.
God, with the statue.
With the statue.
Oh my God.
Oh, but I want to talk about animal trials a little bit, specifically, like a specific case that I'm very fascinated with. But during medieval times, the type of animal accused of a crime determined which jurisdiction it fell under. So farm animals like, you know, pigs, cows, dogs, horses, that sort of thing, they were tried in civil and criminal courts.
Naturally.
Of course. Whereas things like vermin, rats, mice, and what they called pestiferous creatures like beetles, frogs, grasshoppers, snakes, those sort of things, fell under the church.
Oh, okay.
Yes, which at the time was
essentially just like this all-inclusive power that frequently held tribunals.
Mm-hmm.
And this difference was because farm animals kind of belonged to a household or like worked for people.
Okay.
And so they were tried just like any family member would be tried, of course. While these pestiferous creatures were seen only as being able to be controlled by God, you know, think like swarm of locusts and, you know, sending flies to scare the Egyptians, those sort of things.
Sure.
So clearly people did not have jurisdiction. Only God did. Thus the church spoke for him. So this one specific case, it's the early 1500s in medieval France. The town of Autun, was on the verge of starvation because an army of rats was slowly but surely eating through their harvest of barley that was meant to sustain the population for the long winter. So the villagers tried, you know, the usual, setting traps, releasing cats, trying to poison the rats, but nothing worked. So, of course, they proceeded to place proclamations at several crossroads that the rats were to attend an episcopal court that would be assembled to hear the village's complaints against them. Natural next step.
So did the rats show up?
Well, you'll see. So, can you just imagine like a little troop of rats? We're here.
I can't imagine seeing these freaking posters.
All rats of Autun, you are hereby summoned. So they were even appointed representation, though.
Good.
So, yeah. So there was a lawyer named Bartholomé de Chassenay, who was apparently like super stoked to be on this case. He met it with enthusiasm. He was ready to go. But, you know, wouldn't you know it, the rats did not show up for their summons. Gosh.
Dude.
I know it. So the judge wanted the rats to be tried in absentia. Mm-hmm. So basically just the lawyer talk for them. But Chassenay pointed out to the court that it wasn't just like one or two rats that, you know, was being tried here, but like the whole
army.
Host of them.
Yeah.
And so as such, they should all be given the chance to appear to before. Speak. Yes, they all need a chance, obviously. So, and he also added. This is real. This is real.
I want a musical about this. Oh my so God. Bad.
Oh my God. Cats, get on it. who is that? Andrew Lloyd Webber? You're dead. Figure it out.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. Musical of the rat trial of the early 1500s.
Chassenay also added that since the rats were so spread out in the village, there was no way that the villagers had posted enough signs for all of the rats to be able to read them.
True. And how do we know that they all read the same language?
I mean, they could speak several different languages. Yeah. Yes. So they were, you know, clearly uninformed of their summons. So they just needed they needed more time. The judge found that de Chassenay had merit, and so to ensure that as many rats as possible were notified, summons was duly posted in all of the churches of every neighboring town. So they are hitting up everywhere. They are making sure these rats can read the proclamation, and according to the judge's orders, the proclamations were to be posted near the ground for the rodents to be able to read them. I mean, naturally. This kind of feels like, you know, the TikTok trial. Like, could we focus on something else, please?
Literally
anything else. The rats just failed to appear again.
Oh my God. They're probably in with the Chinese Communist Party.
Obviously. So, but de Chassenay was not, you know, worried. He said this time, he argued that of course they didn't appear because they feared for their lives.
The villagers had tried to poison them. They sent cats out to kill them. So, of course, they could have just, you know, walk out into the daylight and come to the courtroom. And he argued that no defendant could be forced to risk his or her life to come to court. And that applied to the rats, too. I mean, they deserve a fair trial.
I kind of love this lawyer.
Right? Yeah. He's, like, getting into it.
Yeah, and I feel like he would make like a real good like human rights lawyer.
Yes, he does go on to do good things. Okay. So. So the judge agreed with him and he ordered the villagers to lock all of their cats inside their homes on the day of the trial so the rats could safely come to court. But, you know, like how would you feel if you're a farmer, you're a medieval farmer, and someone just told you to lock your cat up? That's like, you know, mostly lived outside because 1500s,
right?
You know, just so some rats could go to court.
Who's gonna speak for the cat?
Exactly. Yeah, so the villagers not having it, against it outright.
Dave is snoring so loud. Oh my god.
Amazing. They just, like, the villagers outright said, we're not doing that shit. Sorry. No. So the case was adjourned without setting a date for another hearing. So the rats effectively won their case against the farmers. Because they just kind of gave up. So, yeah, the rats won their case. God, so stupid. But every time I just... It's like,
I mean, if I like that, you know, if a defendant is in fear of their life,
yeah,
then how is that fair?
Exactly. Yeah, you can't just expect them to come to court if they're going to get killed. Duchastenay went on to do, you know, he had an incredibly successful career. He defended lots of different people, you know, from peasants to merchants and rich counts. No more rats, though.
No more rats.
No more rats. So he did use the same defense in 1540 when he was serving as president of the Parliament of Provence. And he was defending a religious group that was charged with heresy. Heresy? It was one of those, like, Catholics against Protestant things.
Yep.
The defendants included 80 families that they were all Protestants, and they were called Waldensians. They were all living in the small town of Meridol, and when they did not appear for their summons, the court ordered the town to be burned to the ground. Just, like...
The river?
No, the town.
Oh, I thought you said the town.
Oh, the whole town. Okay. Like, they were just like, these people didn't come to court, so we're going to burn their town down.
That's totally reasonable.
Yes. But Duchastenay contended that, similar to the rat case, it was unreasonable to expect this very marginalized religious community to appear in court with Catholics who were ready to, like, basically jump and kill them on the first opportunity. He said, ironically, how could humans, even heretics, not have the same right to a fair trial as rats?
Yeah.
So, and he won that argument. Yeah, the group, just like the rats of Autun, were spared another day when the sentence against the Protestants of Meridol was placed on an indefinite hold because there was just no safe time for them to come to court. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's just my favorite example. All hail
the rat lawyer.
All hail him, Duchastenay. There's so many of these cases. There's like a whole text I think it was written in the 1800s, so like dry, but it like chronicles every single case against.
What do you mean you didn't have enough information to do a full episode?
That's true.
Could be an entire season.
I could just read the whole thing.
This could just be what we do from here on out.
Because he chronicle not only like animal cases but also all of those inanimate object cases. So here's just a few like snippets of other cases real quick. So in 1474, a rooster was put on trial in the city of Basel for, quote, the heinous and unnatural crime of laying an egg, which rooster, okay, I think they probably just misgendered it. Because the townspeople were convinced that the egg was spawned by Satan.
Okay.
Yeah. So another example that, you know, I don't know, it's kind of shocking today because of the outcome. In 1750, Jacques Ferrin, a Frenchman, was tried and found guilty of copulation with a female donkey. He was sentenced to be hanged. And usually in these cases, which I hate that they, like, we have to say the word usually, that because that implies that there was lots more of these kinds of bestiality cases. Nah. But in these cases, the animal would also be put to death. However, in this time, the female donkey was acquitted and spared death because she was found to be a victim and not a willing participant.
Well, no shit.
No one asked her what she was wearing. Instead, a document was presented to the court on behalf of the donkey, attesting to the virtuous nature of the animal. It was signed by the parish priest and other principal residents of the commune. She was a good donkey. Yeah, it proclaimed, quote, they were willing to bear witness that she is in word and deed and in all her habits of life a most honest creature. So she fared better than, you know, women today. So.
Also, like, bestiality, awful, disgusting, terrible.
Yeah.
But sentenced to death?
Yep. Hanged immediately.
I mean, I guess we have made some improvements.
A little bit.
Criminal justice proceedings.
Yeah. My last super quick example happened in the year 2004.
Nope, that's too recent. 2004. I'm uncomfortable with that.
So in this case, Katya, who is a female brown bear, was found guilty of mauling two people in separate incidents and was sentenced to 15 years incarceration.
Yeah,
which she served in the Arkalak prison in Kazakhstan. She had a two-cage cell and her own swimming pool and was cared for by the inmates, not the infants. As I was writing this, I must have been real tired because I wrote that she was cared for by infants.
Praised each other. Oh, my God.
So after serving her 15-year sentence, she was released to a mini zoo in a recreation center where she was able to congregate with other bears.
Could she just go to the zoo in the first place?
They needed to make an example to all the bears.
Oh,
stop mauling people.
God.
You go against your very nature and quit it. Yeah. So, that's what I know about my favorite part of history. There's just real weird trials.
That's incredible. That is incredible. I love it so much.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
So
I don't even know what to do with
that. I know.
How do I become a rat lawyer?
I know.
Well, I have one more little thing.
Yes.
I don't know. We want to... Yeah. We'll do it. Okay. It's not that long. This is my favorite piece of history. Not really.
No. Oh, God.
I do enjoy it. Okay. I do enjoy it. Okay. So I had completely spaced that this happened. Maybe you remember the Dave Matthews Band Chicago River incident.
No.
Are you familiar with this?
No. And I currently live, you know, where Dave was born and raised.
Oh, I know.
I don't know if he was born and raised there, but he did a lot of stuff there.
He did a lot of stuff there, and he has a winery there.
Yeah.
Okay, so for this, we're going back to 2004. The same year.
Katya!
The same year.
Okay.
This was really a tragic year.
For bands and bears.
For band. Not for the band.
Okay.
So much worse. So Dave Matthews Band was real popular in 2004. Yo. They had just released a CD DVD set of their performance at the Gorge Amphitheater in 2002. Everyone has a story about how seeing Dave Matthews Band live changed their life because it started raining and Zeus can't even imagine.
Started raining.
Why is it always raining at Dave Matthews? Okay, so summer 2004, they're on tour.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing 48 shows at sold-out venues across the country.
Okay.
On August 7th and 8th, they had back-to-back shows at the Alpine Valley Music Theater in East Troy, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Which is about an hour and 45 minutes north of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So the night between the shows, the musicians were booked in rooms at the Peninsula Hotel in downtown Chicago. And they were traveling with several buses, I think five. I'm not positive, but it was definitely like more than one or two.
Okay.
Now, one of the most popular tourist activities in downtown Chicago during the warmer months is the Chicago Architecture Center's River Cruise.
Oh.
So guests board the ship near the DuSable Bridge mm-hmm. at the corner of Michigan Avenue and East Wacker Drive. The tour then travels west up the river and through the city while a docent narrates the history of Chicago and its most famous buildings.
Mm.
The boat, named Chicago's First Lady, holds up to 150 passengers and has a climate-controlled lower deck mm-hmm. with an open-air upper deck.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, on nice days, the upper deck is the place to be for the best view. So on the afternoon of Sunday, August 8th, 2004, 120 passengers boarded the First Lady for the 1 o'clock architecture tour.
Uh-huh.
In her opening spiel, Captain Sonia Lund gave a bit of humorous advice, telling passengers on the upper deck not to look up with their mouths open when they passed under the city's graded bridges, lest they get a true taste of Chicago.
Oh, no.
Ha ha ha. So for about 15 minutes, the guests enjoyed the sunshine and the sights, and then they reached the Kinzie Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kinzie Street Bridge is a movable bridge that can swing upwards to accommodate larger ships.
Okay.
And like most Chicago bridges, the Kinzie features a riveted graded surface.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows rain, snow, everything to pass through.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to worry about like drainage systems.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't ice the same way that pavement does.
Right.
So much better in Chicago winters. So just as the First Lady passed under the bridge, passengers looked up to see a large black tour bus passing overhead.
No.
Then they were soaked as a substance rained down on them from above.
No.
At first, the volunteer tour guide assured the passengers that they had likely just been splashed by water.
Uh-huh.
But within seconds, the upper deck was overwhelmed with a powerful, horrific smell.
Oh, no.
And guests noticed that they were not wet with water, but with a brownish yellow substance.
No.
And there was no mistaking it. The passengers were covered in human waste.
No.
Yeah.
That is awful. Oh, my God.
As this realization hit the 2/3 of the passengers who'd been splattered and the rest who were looking on, things quickly deteriorated.
Yes, I mean, yes. So I would jump off the frickin' boat.
I'll just go ahead and read this quote from a legal document that we'll talk about in a minute. It says, quote, "The liquid waste was brownish yellow in color, had a foul, offensive odor. The liquid human waste went into passengers' eyes, mouths, hair, and onto clothing and personal belongings, many of which were soaked. Some of the passengers suffered nausea and vomiting as a result of exposure to the human waste."
Sure.
Yeah. So everyone is covered in literal shit and vomiting. And then people are seeing them vomit, and then they're vomiting, and it's like that scene from The Office where Pam throws up,
and then everyone throws up,
except, you know, it's like add poop to that.
Oh, no.
So basically what happened is that as a tour bus crossed the bridge, the driver decided or accidentally opened the bus's septic tank.
Uh-huh.
Or black water system to empty it.
Oh, it was deliberate.
And essentially all of the waste from a bus's toilet is collected in a large container. And there's a toggle switch or a push button that allows a electrical plunger to lift up and everything releases.
Yep.
And you cannot just dump this anywhere.
No. No.
The Department of Transportation has regulations that state black water must be dumped at certified sites. Sewage can introduce harmful pathogens, chemicals, and nutrients into an aquatic ecosystem and contaminate the water. This can lead to pollution that spreads disease among aquatic life and humans.
Yeah.
So it's pretty serious. And the bus on Kinsey Street Bridge dumped about 800 pounds of it.
Oh my God.
Directly onto a passenger boat.
Oh my God.
I know. on the First Lady, passengers struck by the waste included persons with disabilities, the elderly, a pregnant woman, a small child, and an infant.
Oh.
The boat immediately turned around and headed back to the dock as quickly as possible. The 120 passengers disembarked and the cost of their tickets were refunded. Some were given cab fare to get back to their hotels. And some were told that the Architecture Foundation would pay for their dry cleaning bills.
Oh, no.
Five passengers were sent to Northwestern Memorial Hospital for testing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because they were having more intense reactions or if it was like, let's take a sample size of these people and test them to see. A police report was filed, but that day, the tour company's biggest focus was on making sure that the passengers were okay.
Oh.
And getting the boat cleaned up because they had another tour at 3 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
The Chicago Tribune reported that day that, quote, police confirmed a report has been made, but said it was not being investigated as a crime.
Mm.
A witness gave Chicago police an Oregon license plate number that belonged to a 2003 Monaco Royale coach driven by Jerry Fitzpatrick, who has been working as Dave Matthews' personal tour bus driver for 3 years. Fitzpatrick confirmed that he was in Chicago at the time, but that his bus was parked in front of the Peninsula Hotel, and Fitzpatrick invited Sergeant Paul Gardner to inspect the bus and prove that the waste tank was nearly full.
Mm.
On Monday night, a publicist for the band issued a statement saying that the group's management had, quote, determined that all of the buses on our tour were parked at the time of the incident.
Mm.
And while it was initially reported that the incident wasn't being treated as a crime, state prosecutor opened an investigation, and the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago also opened an investigation since it was illegal to dump 800 pounds of human shit into the Chicago River.
Yes, yes.
So investigators got security camera footage from a nearby fitness facility that was able to identify the bus. And it did belong to the Dave Matthews Band.
Uh-oh.
The bus was the one used by the band's violinist, Boyd Tinsley, and was driven by a man named Stephen, I'm not sure which, Wool.
Okay.
On August 24th, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan filed a $70,000 lawsuit against the band for violating state water pollution and public nuisance laws.
Okay.
Apparently, there's not a charge for dumping shit on people.
There should be. The fish need to go to trial.
On August 25th, Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley held a press conference in which he released the videotape of the security camera. And Daley stated that while he was a big fan of the Dave Matthews Band, he believed the dumping was absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah.
So the band ended up settling with the state out of court, and Wool pleaded guilty to reckless conduct and discharging contaminants to cause water pollution. He was sentenced to 150 hours of community service, 18 months probation, and fined $10,000 to be paid to the Friends of the Chicago River. The Dave Matthews Band, because they had been very adamant that this was not them.
Yeah.
They kind of had some making up to do. Especially because, like, they were real big on, like, the environment.
Yep.
So they also donated an additional $50,000 to the Friends of the Chicago River and another $50,000 to the Chicago Park District. And they also agreed to keep a log of when its buses emptied their septic tanks She was like,
it should have been doing all along.
Yeah. It's been said that it's possible that Wool did not intentionally empty the tank,
mm-hmm.
but we'll never know.
Yeah.
Neville Shind, who is a professional tour bus driver, told Esquire, quote, I have seen older buses have a push switch where it was just a switch you push that says dump.
Mm.
A lot of times they'll put the Blackwater button switch right by the driver's left elbow. So if the driver has the armrest down and he moves, I've heard you can hit it with your elbow and then all of a sudden you're dumping Blackwater.
Ah.
To me, it seems too coincidental that this happened right as it was
going over
a graded bridge.
Oh, yeah. No. It had to be intentional.
In 2019, the Chicago Tribune ran a kind of like 15-year anniversary piece.
Y'all remember this? Well, you're gonna know.
The article says, quote, people enjoying one of the city's top tourist attractions, the high-minded river cruise of the Chicago Architecture Foundation, took a direct hit from almost 800 pounds of earth-toned slurry flecked with bits of toilet paper, a mixture ranker than a porta potty on a rock festival's third straight 90-degree day.
Wow.
They never got to finish the architecture tour that day, but they did learn a thing or two about, forgive this, flying buttresses. And in that same article, the Tribune also published a never-before-heard witness account of the event from someone who experienced it from a slightly different perspective.
Oh.
I'm going to read a little bit more straight from the article because it's just so good. Yeah,
that writing is phenomenal.
Okay. In the early afternoon of August 8th, 2004, Lynn LaPlante Alloway was pregnant and driving out of the city with her husband and young son. Back then, she said she was a perpetually nauseous, expectant mother, which meant two things. She was driving with the windows open, and any upset to the senses could send her stomach into tumbling runs worthy of Simone Biles. I always had to drive when I was pregnant because the slightest bit of motion and, you know, the barfing would start, said Alloway, who's now 46 and works as a musician and freelance writer.
Uh-oh.
I mean, this is just such a gross story, right? But there was one good thing, beyond the result, of course, about her unsettled pregnancies, Alloway said. The hormones seemed to go straight to her hair. My husband was in the passenger seat, and then our little toddler, who's now 17, was sleeping in the back, she said. It was just one of those beautiful days with the windows down, and I just remember feeling like, oh, wow, my hair just looks amazing. You know, long and curly. I was just full of self-admiration in the rearview mirror and bragging to my husband about my hair. And then I know there's a big bus, and then it was like instant horror.
Oh, no.
Here is where we pause for a content warning because the next section gets rough, and B, a physics lesson. Apparently, when you dump viscous liquid from a 100-gallon holding tank onto a graded surface, it doesn't all filter instantly to the deck of the tour boat below. Enough of it stays behind to, say, cause a scene that would not be out of place in a Farrelly Brothers film. There was no mistaking what we rolled through, and it was all over our car, Alloway said. We had a Mercedes SUV, and it just got covered. And the smell hit. It was like a physical punch to the face is what the smell was like.
Oh, no.
It wasn't even, oh, I'm going to be sick. Mm-hmm. I just started immediately vomiting.
Oh, no. And she's driving.
Yeah. So I'm trying to lean my head out the window so I'm not throwing up all over the car while I'm driving. It was the most absurd thing. And of course, the wind just blew it all right back into me.
Oh, God.
And my husband is yelling, pull over, exit, exit. Eventually she did, but the bus waste tank smell remained with them on the sides of the car. Alloway was crying and still retching as she and her husband switched seats. He drove to a car wash to clean the vehicle, and Alloway did what she could for herself with paper towels. It was a double shame because Alloway was dressed nicely on her way to perform at a wedding.
No, 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 no.
Here's where the story takes an ironic turn. Like Tinsley, who was the violinist whose bus it was, Alloway is a professional violinist. She plays violin and viola with the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic and is the group's principal violist.
Oh, my God.
It was a violinist dumping on another violinist, she said.
It literally was. Wow.
So over the years, several makeshift memorials to the civilians have appeared on the Kinzie Street Bridge. In 2015, someone erected a sign complete with a candle passerby could light to, quote, never forget the dump poop.
The dump poop.
And in 2022, is that, did I say that right? 2022.
Yeah.
The Riot Fest Historical Society affixed a commemorative sign to the Kinzie Street Bridge that reads, quote, on the afternoon of August 8th, 2004, at this very location, the Dave Matthews Band tour bus emptied the septic tank over the Chicago River, drenching passengers on a boat tour with 800 pounds of human poop. No one died that day, but many wish they had. And that's the Dave Matthews Band Chicago River incident.
I had never heard that. Oh.
Just the worst thing imagined.
Wow. it's
just not only poop, but poop that's been collecting for probably, I don't even know, weeks.
Yeah, I don't.
Months. I don't know. There's no telling.
Just the timing. Just as the bot was.
What are the odds?
What? Oh man, that is wild. Yes. Phenomenal.
Well,
there's some mental health breaks for you.
Yay!
Hooray!
Yeah. Okay. So instead of doing our staff picks up top of the episode.
You mean you don't have a full list of the Dave Matthews incident books?
I don't. God, I wish. I wish that violinist were in the book.
Oh,
God. All the windows are back.
Oh, my gosh. And she was. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So we just put together some lists of just things that. Maybe we'll give you another mental health break when you need it.
Yeah. Should I go first?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So I think my first list is just like books, which, you know, we're librarians, of course it is. And I think I've probably already mentioned most of these on the podcast before. But whenever I need like a full mental health break, I like to reread. And my favorite reread, I think the book that I have reread the most, and it could just be very specific to me, is Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. Something about, it's a YA book, about a girl's freshman year college experience, and just something about the way she writes the anxiety of being a college freshman, just it just hit exactly in my heart. So
yes,
I usually reread it every year, to be honest. I love it. So there's that one. Anytime I'm, you know, in need of a pick-me-up, Louise Miller book. She only has two, unfortunately. But Louise Miller is a professional pastry chef who decided to write books. So she has The City Baker's Guide to Country Living and also The Late Bloomers Book Club. And both are about kind of early middle-aged women just kind of finding their way. Mm-hmm. And they always involve food descriptions, which is fantastic.
Very cozy.
Yeah, so cozy. Mm-hmm. I very recently read Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbert.
Mm-hmm.
And loved it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to presume that anything else that she writes is phenomenal. I need to delve into the rest of hers because it's a series.
Yeah, that's the Chloe Brown.
Yeah. But I loved that one so much. Another very, very cozy, lovely, witchy book is The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches by Sungyu Mandana. Phenomenal, cozy, lovely. And then one that I just finished, which is just pure, lighthearted romance with a paranormal twist, is My Roommate is a Vampire by Jenna Levine. Went in thinking, you know, it's just it's something to fill the time. But I really, really enjoyed it. It is exactly as it sounds. A woman applies to an ad, seems too good to be true about a Chicago apartment that is, you know, phenomenal, beautiful. And the guy is asking $200 a month. But it turns out it's because he's a vampire and he just doesn't know what modern currency is. It's you know, you have to suspend disbelief, of course, because it's a vampire. But it's so fun. Yeah, so there's that. And then my other little bit is something that I've been trying to do lately, because our brains are kind of programmed to find the bad and kind of focus on it. So attempting to kind of rewire your brain a little bit, and you can create, like, some people call it like a happiness journal. I call mine my glimmers, where you just find one very tiny thing. Like, it could literally be like, I like the way the sun is coming through that window. And just these very, very small little bits of joy. And the more you collect them, the more your brain will try to seek out things that will bring you joy. And so I call mine glimmers, and I have a little list on my phone. It doesn't have to be like you sit down and write a journal entry about all of these things. It could literally just, you know, pull out your phone, type a quick note. Yeah. So do that.
I've seen that where they talk about like glimmers being the opposite of triggers.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So cool.
Love that. Yeah. So those are my feel good, fun recommendations.
Yay. Love it. Okay. For my books, again, like you said, I've talked about all these before.
Yeah.
So the first one is Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. This is about an older woman who works at an aquarium and forms an unusual friendship with an octopus named Marcellus. And it's just the sweetest, best book. I absolutely loved it.
Hopefully that aquarium was nothing like the one we went to.
Oh my God. No.
Not joyful.
No, I would help that octopus escape.
Yes.
We couldn't find the octopus. It was very well hidden. My next one is Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuinston. Just a super sweet, fun, gay love story between the future king of England and the president's son.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, just fun and sweet. Yeah. The movie adaptation was horrendous.
Oh, no.
So bad. Okay. So bad. But I love the book.
No.
And then I have The Comfort Book by Matt Haig. And this is just a collection of just like short ideas or thoughts, just little things to bring you comfort. Yeah. And you can just kind of open it to any random page when you need just like a little pick me up. And it's really lovely.
Love it.
And then my author that I read when I don't know what else to read and just need something lighthearted is Jenny Flanagan.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And her books are always just cozy and sweet.
Yeah. She has one coming out about a knitting shop or yarn shop. And it's like this generation of women who work in this yarn shop. And I can't wait to read it.
I love it. I love it. She's always like on like some like coastline in the UK
or God.
Some island. And I
just want to go to there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I was trying to think of like some feel good TV shows.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked about all these. Heartstopper was just renewed for a third season. So that comes out in October, and I'm super excited for that.
Yay.
It's just the sweetest story about like a jock and kind of a nerdy kid who fall in love. It's based on a graphic novel series, and it's so good. It's so good. And then Ted Lasso, always. I'm rewatching that again right now. I put it on in the morning, like when I kind of just need like a little boost.
I need to finally watch that because we finally have Apple TV for a little bit. So yeah.
It is so good.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Watch it.
Will do.
It's one of those shows that like, it's stupid to say that like a show is life changing, but it has like so many little moments that I honestly think about all the time.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. He's such a good person. And then I love Dairy Girls. I rewatched that one quite a bit. It's about a group of teenage girls growing up in Northern Ireland in, I believe it's the early 90s?
Think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just ridiculous and hilarious. And yeah, that's what I have.
Yay. All so good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So just find some time for yourself.
Yes.
Whenever you listen to us.
And if you need more of a vacation, just plan a vacation with your best friend.
Yeah.
To Pitch and Forge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But come, like, I don't know, in the dead of winter or something?
I don't even know. I don't know.
It's so much busier than we could have ever imagined.
Like, worse than Disney World on spring break.
Yeah, worse than Orlando, 100%. crazy. Like, it just, what?
I don't know. I don't know when this happened.
No.
Okay.
But we still had a great time.
We did.
Next time, cabin in the woods.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. Well, I guess we better go to bed.
Yeah. We really should do. And we'll be back soon with a special episode.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to The Reference Desk.
If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/thereferencedesk.
And if you're interested in purchasing any of the books we discussed today, visit our bookshop storefront at bookshop.org/thereferencedeskpod.
You can find us on Instagram at thereferencedeskpod, visit our website at thereferencedeskpod.com, or drop us an email at referencedeskpod@gmail.com.
This episode was written and produced by us.
Our music is C'est Salavi by Eric Harper, and our cover art for the show is by Maria Amaya.
Until next week, we'll see you in the stacks.